Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're talking about why certain novels and authors seem to just fire the imaginations of songwriters and composers. Part of our new Monday series we're calling Music by the Book. The late novelist William S. Burroughs left a sizable mark on the music world. He collaborated himself with numerous musicians, and his writing found its way into song lyrics and even into band names, like this group, Steely Dan, which took its name from the pages of the Burroughs novel Naked Lunch. That novel turns 50 this month. Artist and author DJ Spooky wrote about the Beat Generation classic in the new book Naked Lunch at 50, Anniversary Essays. He joins me and music journalist Michael Azarad by phone, and today he's in Noosa, Australia, which I'm guessing is a lot warmer than the times you've spent in the Antarctic. DJ Spooky, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, it's about 4 a.m. here. I'm staring at the Pacific with my feet kicked up.
Where even is Noosa, Australia?
It's facing the Great Barrier Reef, and it's northeast, way in the north of Australia.
Okay. Paul D. Miller is DJ Spooky, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, that subliminal kid. And in fact, that subtitle, that subliminal kid, is a reference to William S. Burroughs, isn't it?
Absolutely. When I was in college, I went to Bowdoin College up in Maine. And during the winter, you'd have about 6 feet of snow on average. And Burroughs and a couple other writers like Anthony Burgess and Philip K. Dick and a couple of other people really helped make the winters go by. Let's put it that way.
So why do you think this novel, Naked Lunch in particular, has proven to be so influential over the years?
Well, I think you really have to go back to two things. One, Brian Gysin, who was kind of William S. Burroughs' muse. And Gysin's was, if you think about the zeitgeist of the 60s, you had the master musicians of Jujuka, you had Morocco, Brian Jones from the Rolling Stones was hanging out. There was this kind of
He actually famously recorded the master musicians of Jujuka there in Morocco.
Yeah, absolutely. But in North Africa, there was a kind of an expatriate community that somehow, whether you look at the Black Mountain College, which was going on around the same time, but you had Paul Bowles, you had
right.
Allen Ginsberg visit. There was a kind of interesting, bizarre collision between American culture and Islam. A lot of writers would hang out. They'd smoke hashish, whatever. But I think Burroughs, for the bohemian milieu of that era, I think he kind of got this idea of being between worlds. And I think right now, of course, fast forward to 2009, where the U.S. is in wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and you have this kind of global tension with Islam. I, for some reason or another, I tend to think Burroughs, the zeitgeist, is very malleable. He's able to kind of navigate between a lot of different media with his books, and I think that's been an inspiration for artists for the last 40 years, 50 years plus, because it just gets the DNA of the moment, you know?
All right, now Paul, you mentioned Brian Gysin. He's the guy who, he's not nearly as well known as Burroughs or Ginsberg or any of those other guys, but he did the cut-up stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
He influenced
the whole situation. If he was a high, how should I put it, the high priest of this kind of scene. The cut-up technique was meant to really destabilize meaning as we knew it. And when I say meaning, I'm talking about like the idea of how text creates an impression in someone's mind. He would literally project words and have Burroughs read them as a mantra, and then they'd do repetitions. And it was really a wild scene. I mean, yeah, pretty bohemian in that time period. I don't think America really has anything like that at this point. But
well, what about
the cut-up technique?
I mean, what about sampling, digital sampling? Isn't that just like the contemporary version of the cut-up technique, where you would take a newspaper article and cut up the words, throw them in the air, and see how they fell?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go back a little earlier, I mean, people like Antonin Artaud were doing a similar thing with theater. You had, at the turn of the last century, you had the French symbolist poets like Mallarmé and Apollinaire. There was a whole scene of people in the 20th century trying to get to the meat of what it meant to write a story or a text. And of course, I mean, at this point, with our era of cut and paste, digital media kind of you know, post YouTube Google of the mind. You know, it seems like, again, Burroughs got there in a way that James Joyce, for example, I mean, if you look at the way Finnegan's Wake was written, he was playing with text, but he was also a kind of a disciple of Thomas Edison's, you know, the phonograph cylinder kind of scene. But Burroughs really, I think, is, if you look at technology and how it changes a text, recording things, Burroughs really wanted to understand how recordings influence the composition of a text or a music piece. And I think one of his last pieces was a composition he did with Kurt Cobain called, I believe it was The High Priest of something. It was like this weird, Kurt Cobain did these noise feedback loops, and Burroughs was reading from Naked Lunch, if I remember correctly.
Well, Michael, you're the Nirvana biographer. You know all about this, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was called The Priest, they called him, and it was a short piece by Burroughs. But, you know, I think a lot of, I think what Spooky is saying is certainly valid, but also I think a lot of the mystique of Burroughs comes from the man himself. He was living like a rock and roller almost before rock and roll existed. He was a junkie, and he was actually pretty much exiled to Mexico, fleeing the authorities, just like the character in Naked Lunch. You know, his Naked Lunch was the subject of a very famous obscenity trial.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of outlaw mystique to Burroughs himself. So it's going to rub off on anything he does. You know, and Naked Lunch is, you know, it's a standard outsider text. Kids get fed 1984 and Lord of the Flies and, you know, all those kind of books in school, probably Grapes of Wrath. But there's always going to be those other kids, those kind of imaginative naysayers who are going to look outside the box and read the forbidden stuff, the stuff that contradicts a more orderly idea of how they're supposed to comport themselves. And those kids, for 50 years, have gravitated towards Naked Lunch. And those kids also really like the more edgy rock and roll.
And often make it themselves,
exactly.
as it has turned out.
Yeah.
We're talking about music looking to books, and right now to a specific book, Naked Lunch, which turns 50 this month, the William S. Burroughs novel. A very strange book, as Michael was just saying, a very strange guy who led the outsider life. And there is another part of it, and that is the voice. William S. Burroughs had this amazing voice, and DJ Spooky, Paul, actually set this up for us. It's you and Scanner, and the piece is called Fuse, The Five Steps. This is not actually from Naked Lunch, though, is it?
No, there's a couple. Well, in both of my books, I worked with William S. Burroughs' estate, and we got access to his voice. We had Iggy Pop reading there's a whole Hassani Saba stuff for my second book, Sound Unbound. And in the first book, Scanner, he's a very interesting guy because he's able to use these kind of cell phone decoding machines to get access to all the frequencies swirling around us and make music out of that. I always found his nickname kind of interesting. In London, he's a kind of a notorious figure because he'll get on people's phone conversations and then make music out of it. If you really think about it, it's very Burroughsian. If you think about the interzone and like the, you know, way recordings and all sorts of stuff. So Burroughs' estate gave us the vocal material, and we were trying to figure out, okay, well, should we do cut-ups? I was like, of course. But the material is taken from the series of records, Breakthrough and Grey Room, that Burroughs did. And the problem with a lot of that is the documentation was kind of obscure. So we were never quite sure which. There's also a lot of interrelation between the stories and the way that he'd do these kinds of vignettes that would pop up as motifs in other books as well.
So it's very difficult to say with 100% certainty, this clip here is from this book there. But let's hear a little bit from DJ Spooky and the English producer known as Scanner.
Space. Space. Forget a dead empire and build a living republic. Time to forget a dead empire and build a living republic. Number one, proclaim a new era and set up a new calendar. Space number two. Replace alien language. Space number three. Destroy or neutralize alien gods. Space number four. Destroy alien machinery of government control.
So that is my guest DJ Spooky, who's on the line with us from Noosa, Australia, and the English producer Scanner. And a piece called Fuse, The Five Steps, featuring the voice of the author William S. Burroughs. It really is, it's just such a great outsider voice. And Michael Azarad, the music journalist with me here in the studio, it is a voice that other people have used as well. Bill Laswell, Laurie Anderson, numerous others.
Yeah.
And it just in terms of, I mean, you and Spooky both mentioned Kurt Cobain, but other rockers as well, Joy Division, the Chicago post-rock band Tortoise. Why? Why do rock musicians come back to this book so often?
Well, yeah, you know, it is a classic outsider text. It challenges your ideas of you know, the complexity of the world. I think it's a book for people who are curious and who are not satisfied with the very simple explanations of anything. And I think that goes to that cut up thing. There's a lot of ambiguity in the book. There's a lot of really, you know, just there's just a lot of crazy, sensationally edgy stuff, and that's just very rock and roll. It's just very exciting and stimulating to the imagination for any musician.
Either of you care to take a stab at telling us what the book is about?
Well, yeah, let me, Michael, can I just...
Yeah, go.
Being from the 21st century digital perspective, I mean, I really am a fan of how, okay, we have the interzone as one of the main, literally, it's a geography, but it's also a fourth dimensional, fifth dimensional kind of space that drifts through reality. Naked Lunch, as far as I recall, there was a conversation that Jack Kerouac, supposedly, the myth is Jack Kerouac's essay, the title. And when you look at the Cronenberg film, there's a reference to the kind of North Africa, like there was a lot of political intrigue going on between nation states. You had agents, you had spies. Burroughs was really into this idea of kind of a comic book scenario, like the what he also called blue movies. There's kind of satire, there's these weird predatory mugwumps, eccentric personalities of various expatriates who are secret agents of unknown powers. You're never quite sure what ends up happening because it's this kind of...
You could have just said no. You could have just said no. I can't tell you what it's
about. Well, there is a little bit of a story. It starts out with this guy, William Lee, who's being persecuted by the authorities for doing drugs, and he runs away. And he
is clearly William S. Burroughs' alter ego.
And he winds up in Mexico just like Burroughs did.
Right.
And then he wanders into the interzone, and then it's like the Star Wars cantina after that.
Yeah. And there is this David Cronenberg 1991 film adaptation where composer Howard Shore, who would later do the Tolkien trilogy scores, joins forces with sax player Ornette Coleman to collaborate on the score of Naked Lunch. So Ornette Coleman and Howard Shore collaborating on some music inspired by William S. Burroughs' The Naked Lunch. And we've been speaking with Paul D. Miller, better known as DJ Spooky, and with the music journalist Michael Azarad, kicking off our series Music by the Book. Paul, Michael, thank you both for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Okay, and thanks.
Our series, Music by the Book, continues on Mondays this summer. We'll look at the musical impact of books like Herman Melville's Moby Dick and Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, among others. But coming up next, the Lisbon-born singer Lura talks about the music of the Cape Verde Islands, and she'll play live in our studio. This is Soundcheck.